No risk it, no biscuit.
Arizona Cardinals fans, do you see red? Are you part of the Red Sea? Then you are listening to the show for you, a podcast for Cardinals fans, by Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider perspectives. It's time to rise up and see red. Welcome, Arizona Cardinals fans, to the latest edition of the Rise Up, See Red podcast. I'm your host, Jess Root, from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL wire site covering the Arizona Cardinals. My host on the line is Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, SB Nation's NFL site for the Arizona Cardinals, and also the host of the NFL Draft Breakdown podcast. We're on show 157. This is our post-draft review and wrap-up show. Seth, how are you after all the fun stuff of the draft? That was one heck of a weekend, was it not?
Yeah, I mean, I think I was happy and upset by the end, because I was upset because I was sitting in line at Raising Cane's when that just opened in Chicago. So it's literally like an hour wait for food there. And then the Cardinals decide to trade up from the seventh round, which was nice for you and I, because that means we got done early with all our stuff and we could get started on the undrafted free agent tracker. But it was frustrating because, you know, I was trying to get some chicken. So,
Blake didn't he predict this, is that they would trade up to do that while you were gone. But you have no idea just how picked on we media people are. Everyone in the Cardinals facility, and I was covering the draft from the Cardinals facility with all the other local media here. And when the Cardinals, it was thought, well, maybe, you know, because we had the two picks in the seventh round. A couple years ago, they had the very last pick, and that made for a long Saturday, because you're waiting for the last pick, then you have the conference call, then you have to wait for Bruce Arians and Steve Keim. And we had the two seventh rounders this time around. Well, okay. And then, well, maybe they'll trade up into the sixth. And they did it, and it was a collective like shout for joy in the media room there. And if you followed on Twitter, you probably saw some strange picks, because I don't even care who they picked. We all won that afternoon because we were able to be home by 4:30.
Right. That was great. That's the best part of it, is that, you know, we got to end our day about an hour and a half before everybody else did. I mean, we were still riding, we were still setting up the undrafted free agent tracker, but I can tell you, I don't know who was picked after Jonathan Rudy Ford was picked.
So. Not at all. Not a single
thing. I should say that I do know Chad Kelly was Mr. Irrelevant.
Oh, that's right. The guy. Why in the world did he get drafted?
But much to the chagrin of Cardinals fans everywhere, who believe that he was the undrafted free agent quarterback that they were going to be bringing in the next guy.
Well, that this is for another show, is the fact that none of the guys, the two guys that we have at least reported that are going to be in rookie camp, Trevor Knight and Antonio Pipkin. Ooh, that moves the dial for you, doesn't it?
Knight is a probable
receiver.
Yeah, tight end, wide receiver convert. And, you know, I am, and Justin and I talk about this all the time on the Draft Breakdown podcast. The lot of quarterbacks that got an invite to the Senior Bowl were awful. The lot of quarterbacks that were at the lower level games made those guys look like all-stars. So when you see an Antonio Pipkin get an invite to the Senior Bowl, you're like, awesome. A D2 kid is going to get from Tiffin. I didn't even know that was a real school.
I don't think it really is.
he is going to get a shot on the big stage to impress a kid. You know, go up and get drafted in the fifth or sixth round. And he crapped himself. I mean, he absolutely just pooped the bed. And it was just one of those things, like, you could tell he had never played with guys that big, that fast. And that is always the concern when you go small school. You know, we'll get to Chad Williams later, but that is the concern, is that you don't see these guys against bigger, faster D1 players. They're going against guys that you and I could never stand up against, you know, D2 players, but they're still D2 players. They're still not even in the top, you know, 1% of the humanity in terms of athleticism. And so, you know, we'll see what happens with Pipkin and Knight. I'm wondering if Knight's going to ask to work out as a wide receiver or tight end, especially since, you know, the Cardinals didn't draft a tight end. The two positions we were sure they were going to draft, tight end and cornerback. They go with a safety that is maybe going to play corner and Ricky Seals-Jones, the big wide receiver from Texas A&M, who they're going to probably try to convert to tight end. Like, so we're going to go positional converts. We know apparently versatility is king to Steve Keim.
That totally is the case if they can find themselves a quarterback receiver. That would, oh geez. Oh, so if you haven't, you know, if you haven't already turned us off to, we're talking about the NFL draft. You know, the last 3-4 weeks we've been talking leading up to the draft. The draft is done, so we're gonna go through the Arizona Cardinals draft, and we're gonna go through it. We're gonna go through each of the picks, each of the deals that happened, because there were 7 selections over 6 rounds with 3 trades, and kind of what we're gonna do during the show is we're going to lead off. We're just going to go through. I'm going to tell you what the moves were. Then we're going to go player by player, talk about the, you know, our thoughts on who they picked, where they fit, whether it's a good fit or not, what their role is now and moving forward. And you know, we can kind of look at who is still on the board and possibilities that there were within the draft. And after that, we will go through our grades and some things that we've learned now. We've got 5 years of drafting habits of drafting track record from Steve Keim, and Seth's put together quite the list of things now we know about Steve Keim. So that's what we're going to lead off with. But first, who are the draft picks? So if you haven't seen it yet, the Cardinals made 7 selections over 6 rounds. Round 1 with the 13th pick overall, they stand pat with their selection. They then either trade up nor trade down. They pass up on 2 of their supposed 5 top coveted defensive players, passing on safety Malik Hooker, passing on linebacker Reuben Foster, and instead go with the versatile and athletic Hassan Reddick out of Temple. And that's what they did in the first round. Round 2, they originally had the 45th selection. Instead of standing pat there, they make a move to trade up to number 36. To do so, they give up the second round pick that they have, so they swap picks with the Chicago Bears. They give up a 4th rounder this year, a 6th rounder this year, and a 4th rounder next year, and in return also gain Chicago's 7th rounder. And with that pick at number 36, they make the selection of Washington safety Buda Baker, two-way play, kind of a combo player, safety, nickel, kind of played a little bit of everything, but reminds people of a little bit of faster and a thicker Tyrann Mathieu. We'll talk into him. And so that was the start of day 2. Get round 3. They were slated to have pick number 77. Instead of picking at 77, they drop back 21 selections. And in doing so, they trade back with the Carolina Panthers, swapping spots with them to number 98. And they do gain a 4th round selection, giving them a higher pick than what they had originally before the Buda Baker move. And with the 98th pick overall, they make a small school receiver pick, Chad Williams out of Grambling State. 6'1", 6', 204-pounder with good to great speed, super physical, super strong. And that wrapped up day 2 of the draft. On day 3, with the newly acquired 4th-round pick, they pick up Pitt guard Dorian Johnson, the All-American out of Pittsburgh, and they make him their selection. They're at pick number 115. Originally, they were going to have, what was it, pick number 19. And so they actually get a pick that was a little bit higher. So they take Dorian Johnson out of Pitt with the fourth round. In the fifth round, they have two selections, one their regular pick and two their compensatory pick, with the first pick in the fifth round, number 157, the 13th pick in the round. And kind of what for me was actually the surprise pick of the draft was tackle Will Holden out of Vanderbilt, 6'7", 311-pounder, versatile, plays both tackles positions, can kick it inside the guard. Then later in the round, they go to, with their compensatory pick, they select running back T.J. Logan out of North Carolina, speedy running back, backup to Elijah Hood at North Carolina, actually gets drafted quite a bit before the guy he played behind. A dynamic kick returner, very dynamic in the running game and in the passing game, but speed, speed, speed. Then they were supposed to have two seventh-round picks as a result, because they traded away their sixth-round pick. But instead of waiting until the seventh round, we talked about that, they helped us media and our reporters out there by trading up. They traded both their seventh-round picks to the Oakland Raiders, and in exchange, they get the Raiders' sixth-round pick. And with that, number 208 overall, they select Jonathan Rudy Ford out of Auburn, a former running back in high school, changed to defensive back, a guy that they had interest in, that at least it was one of the leader reports. And that rounded out their draft class, a player that has played some safety and some nickel. However, they project him as a cornerback. And so that wraps up the entire draft class. In all, seven players, six rounds, and three trades, two going up and one going down. It was a very active draft. And so after the break, we're going to come back and we're going to talk about each and every single one of these selections. And that's where we'll go next on Rise Up C-Red. This edition of the Rise Up C-Red podcast is brought to you by Blue Apron, our friends at Blue Apron. You've heard me talk about this wonderful food delivery service, recipe delivery service, for many episodes now, for over the last several weeks and last few months. They're still supporting the podcast. And in Blue Apron, it's a product that, you know, if you're looking for a different way to handle food in your home. You want to eat at home more. You want more home-cooked meals. But you want variety and quality and high-quality, delicious food. Blue Apron's the service for you. It's the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country. And the mission is to make incredible home cooking accessible to everyone. It's responsible growing of their crops, of the farmers and the ranches. They're all responsibly taken care of. So not only are they taking care of families by offering you the opportunity to create delicious home-cooked meals, they're also taking care of the environment. It's restaurant-style, restaurant-quality cuisine in terms of meals, without having to go pay restaurant prices. It's very reasonably priced. You can it's less than $9 a serving, and you can have it delivered right to your door every week, and with just the perfect amount of ingredients. You need to check out some of the upcoming meals that are coming up. We've got a beef teriyaki stir fry with sugar snap peas and lime rice, baked spinach and egg flatbread with sauteed asparagus and lemon aioli. This is all delicious stuff. Every single meal that I've gotten from Blue Apron that prepared has been fantastic. And so I'd like to make sure you guys know that my listeners here, the Rise Up C-Red podcast listeners, have a deal. For less than $10 per person per meal, you get the seasonal recipes and everything, but we've got a deal for you. So check out this week's menu and get your first three meals for free with free shipping. All you got to do is go to blueapron.com/red. Again, blueapron.com/red. You're going to get your first three meals for free with free shipping. Test it out. You'll love how good it feels, it tastes, to create incredibly home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. So again, blueapron.com/red. Blue Apron, a better way to cook. We're back on Rise Up C-Red. We recapped each of the picks. We recapped what the actual NFL draft did play out for the Arizona Cardinals. And now, let's get started, and we're going to talk about Hassan Reddick. Was Reddick a surprise for you at all?
No, I think, I mean, you and I talked about it on our mock draft. I said, you know, he would have been the pick for me had he fallen on my board. you know, you kind of called the Lattimore fall there. Neither of us had any idea that wide receivers were going to go.
Oh my gosh.
Three wide receivers were going to go in the first.
Two running backs in the top 10. That's crazy.
So, you know, and we, you and I both misread the quarterback situation. I think we both had Watson in the right spot at 12, just to the wrong teams. Yes. But we both misread the NFL's love of Pat Mahomes. So, you know, what ended up happening, and, you know, I talk about it enough, so you would think I knew this, but positional value doesn't dictate an off-ball linebacker going high, and that's Reddick. It doesn't dictate a safety that can't do multiple things. Maybe, you know, and I'm not saying that Malik Hooker can't, but on film he has not done multiple things, whereas Jamal Adams has been a slot corner. He has been a, you know, free safety. He's been a strong safety. He's been an in-the-box linebacker. So when you look at that, it shouldn't have been a surprise to see Reddick, Hooker, Foster, Jonathan Allen, a non-passer rushing interior defensive lineman, or, you know, big defensive end. All of these guys fall because none of them had positional value of going early. So Reddick being there at 13 all of a sudden made sense because it allowed the Cardinals to make a decision on what they wanted. And what they wanted, and something that, you know, we'll get to, well, I mean, we can start now. Versatility is all that matters to the Cardinals. And you still have to have production. You still have to have the athletic measurables. But if you can do multiple things, right? Like if you can play multiple positions, if you can be a matchup piece that other teams can't answer, or is an answer to other teams, a Jimmy Graham, you know, San Francisco and Los Angeles don't have any good players, but, you know, guys, talented players like Jimmy Graham, you know, a guy that can run with Russell Wilson, people like that, it makes sense that they would covet that over a more conventional free safety in Malik Hooker and a, you know, more conventional linebacker in Reuben Foster. So Reddick being there, it wasn't a surprise. I had him going at 11. So 11 or 13 is, you know, it's negligible in terms of draft value. And then, you know, you just look at it and it makes 100% sense that they would choose a player of Reddick's athleticism, size, clean record of health and off-field issues over the question mark of Reuben Foster and, quite frankly, the question mark of Malik Hooker, who has, you know, shoulder surgery, who has and then had two sports hernias repaired. So he, you know, or no, sorry, the labrum's in his hips. I don't even know like what that does, to be completely honest. So like, you know, those, all of that meant that once the quarterbacks were off the board, Reddick was, and Jamal Adams, Reddick was the guy.
And that makes sense. And in terms of Jamal Adams landing with the Jets, I cannot imagine a player that Todd Bowles would like more to have on his team, even for a year. But, you know, and
poor Todd Bowles. Even for a year.
But with the Reddick pick, and we both talked about it, and if you'd followed me on Twitter at all for the last little bit, not because I knew anything, but based on the years that I followed the Cardinals, Hassan Reddick was the most Cardinals pick they could have made. Now, the fact that he was available with 13 was a surprise to the Cardinals even because and to a lot of people who were following the draft because they knew that teams like the Bengals and the Saints were also very, very high on Reddick. But, you know, I kind of called it a month ago. Yes, I had in my mock draft, and I called a month ago. It'll be Hassan Reddick in round one, and I thought it'd be Davis Webb in round two. I turned out to be half right, but, you know, even though Mark Dalton of the Cardinals does not recognize my mock draft as one being that was – did not recognize my mock draft as one that got – that picked Hassan Reddick. That's, he matches exactly what the Cardinals look for. I mean, he's like you mentioned it. He's got the off the charts athleticism. He's got the versatility. He has potential to grow. And then you look at the type of player and the type of character he is. He checks off every single box in every single way. Reuben Foster, you had questions, even though you felt probably he would have been. He's probably going to be a better. You know, a better inside linebacker overall, but Reddick offers and after seeing the sports science that once he completely destroyed that crash test dummy, hearing some of the comments of what people's like, I'm not 100% convinced that he's going to be a great inside linebacker. His pass rushing ability will be something very, very intriguing, especially even early on.
Yeah, and I think that's what the key was, and you and I have talked about this, and fans don't like to hear this, but there wasn't a spot for a linebacker to come in and play.
Nope.
So you get a guy in Reddick who can come in and play in situational things. Reuben Foster is a better pure linebacker. There is – I don't know if you'd find many people that would disagree with that statement.
And he found himself a great home in San Francisco where he's going to be playing alongside Navarro Bowman.
Oof. Right. And so, you know, does it make sense that, you know, the Cardinals took a player in Reddick who isn't as good at the position? Well, it does because they don't need him to be as good in 2017. They need him to probably – the year to me that you'll grade this on is 2019. So 2017, he's going to play, you know, health willing. He's going to play in nickel situations, and he'll be an extra pass rusher when they go to that crazy, you know, 3-2-6 that they go to.
And here's the secret about that. He's going to take over Alex Okafor's role, which was 200 and change snaps. He's not going to play a whole lot unless he forces himself to play more.
Either an injury or he gets forced in there more. So there's that, right? Then the other situation here is, so in 2018, he takes over as a full-time linebacker. I'm still not going to expect him to be at the same level as Reuben Foster, who, since he's been a Peewee football player, has played inside linebacker. Like that's what he's played. That's his instincts. It's an innate thing. It's built into him to be a linebacker. It is not that way for Hassan Reddick yet. And so when you look at those two things, 2019 to me is when you're going to say, okay, now I know what we have in him. So, you know, 2017, this year, you're going to get a player that's going to jump out on the film, you know, two or three times a game. And you're going to go, wow, this guy has it. Then, you know, 2018, you're going to get a guy that you're like, huh, why isn't he standing out as much? Well, he's still finding his way to being a linebacker, but he's still going to give you some plays. And then in 2019, that's when we're going to go, holy cow, this kid can be a very good, you know, Darrell Washington, Carlos Dansby-esque high level of inside linebacker. And that's what the goal is. So, you know, but going back to the original point, that's more valuable to the Cardinals than having a ready-made inside linebacker for 2017, because it's unlikely that Reuben Foster was going to be better than Carlos Dansby or Deion Buchanan in 2017.
Exactly. So, and the interesting thing is with, for me, is if you're looking at the 2018 season, is they're also going to have to bank on Deion Buchanan to become the signal caller. He might not play the mic, but he's going to have to be the quarterback back there. Just like Kevin Minter finally developed into it in his third season. He finally took over play calling from Carlos Dansby in 2013 and Larry Foote in 2014. In 2015, it was Kevin Minter. In 2017, that's going to be Carlos Dansby. In 2018, I don't think Reddick will be ready for that. And so they're going to have to bank on, well, one, it's not only playing behind Dansby will teach Reddick some of the nuances actually playing the position. They're also banking on Deion Buchanan to take the next step as well and be a big leader on the field in 2018 so that Reddick doesn't have to do that until perhaps a 2019 when who knows if the Cardinals end up keeping Buchanan after that 2018 season.
Well, I'll tell you from a value standpoint, I'd really like the Cardinals to stop investing in inside linebacker highly. Just like this is their third top 45 pick on an inside linebacker. So at some point you'd like to just keep both of these guys and move forward. But yeah, I mean, I think people are excited about the pick and they should be, but I think that they need to understand what to be excited about, if that makes sense. And that is that you have a guy that's athletic enough to get himself on the field consistently. And in 2017, and it's not necessarily going to be in the role he's going to be in moving forward.
And the other thing is that round one, they didn't go quarterback. Although there was some discussion, there has been some chatter that they were in on discussions to trade up. Adam Schefter said in a recent report, he was on the radio saying that the board just didn't fall that way. So while Reddick was clearly a player they really wanted, either Patrick Mahomes or Deshaun Watson or Mitchell Trubisky was definitely in on their radar, and it just didn't happen. But as we can tell, those really were the only quarterbacks they even considered.
Yeah, there was a report that surfaced from somebody in Chicago. I don't even know who it is that, you know, they made a call up to two. I don't know if I'd buy that. That's a big investment. You know, if they weren't willing to allegedly give up a first rounder next year to move up to the Buffalo pick to get Mahomes, why on earth would they be willing to move up to two? That would have cost him at least next year's one, probably more. So, you know, they said it the way the board fell. This is, you know, Reddick was their top player. I can tell you just from, you know, kind of piecing things together that I'm, you know, this is a guess, but I'm going to call this a very educated guess that I wouldn't be surprised if Jamal Adams wasn't the top player on their board.
That's very possible.
And people might say, well, what about Myles Garrett? Well,
he was never going to be available.
Right, exactly. He was never going to be there. The other thing is this, and we've heard Kimes say this year for the first time, but it's something that, you know, I've talked about a lot, and I know a lot of NFL teams, you know, believe in this, and that is you put your quarterbacks on a different board, right? So, you know, we heard Kimes say that throughout this – or one time in this process that, like, oh, quarterbacks go on a different board. So when you say that Reddick was their number five overall player and then people are like, oh, okay, or, you know, he was one of their top five players and people are going, okay, all right, so who are their top five? Well, we're never going to know. And people like to think, oh, Myles Garrett was one, Solomon Thomas was two. Like, I don't think it works that way. Like, they have players that they know that they have a chance at. Jamal Adams was one of those players. You know, I don't think Corey Davis was rated that high, but maybe he was. Marshawn Lattimore probably was one of those players. So you look at the players that went before them that kind of fit the bill, and we can, you know, make a checklist. Solomon Thomas was a guy that we heard chatter that he might fall out of the top 10. So could he have been one of their top players? Absolutely. Jamal Adams, you know, another one. If you take quarterbacks off the board, they weren't going to draft Corey Davis high. I mean, Jess and I have tried to explain that ad nauseum.
Mike Williams was never, ever.
They're not, as much as it might be fun, they weren't drafting Leonard Fournette or Christian McCaffrey. It just wasn't happening. I mean, maybe John Ross was on their board. I doubt it, seriously. I mean, I really don't think he was on their board there. So you look at the defensive players selected before the Cardinals, the only people are Solomon Thomas, Jamal Adams, you have, and Marshawn Lattimore.
Marshawn Lattimore.
So those are the three. So, you know, if was Reddick their fourth, was he their third, and they didn't have Solomon Thomas rated because they knew that San Francisco was taking him, you know, so that all of that kind of makes sense and lines up, and you can kind of connect the dots. And then the quarterbacks were just on another board, and they said, look, you know, we have Mitch Trubisky one, Patrick Mahomes two, and Deshaun Watson three, or vice versa, or something of that nature. But, you know, I think there was genuine interest in the quarterbacks, but it had to be at the cost that the Cardinals dictated, not the other team.
Looking ahead to that, let's move to the second round pick of Budda Baker, a guy that if you saw for me, this is the most telling thing is they showed the phone call. It was in the draft room. If you guys saw this on azcardinals.com on Twitter, is they show Steve Keim making the phone call to Budda Baker. They're finalizing the trade up with the Chicago Bears. It goes through. Baker's their pick, and Keim is absolutely thrilled. Fist pumps Michael Bidwell, you know, lets out an expletive, and they were just like, they were genuinely thrilled to get him. Now the question is, well, one, there's a lot to like about Budda Baker, and he was a player that people said that the Cardinals were very interested for quite some time. Was it worth the trade up? That's the question. Why they did that, considering their board.
Yeah, and that was something you and I talked about before the show is, and both instances make sense. You know, if Jamal Adams was their top safety, and then you wonder aloud if Jabril Peppers would have been their number two, because he's the only other guy that kind of fit the versatile theme of Adams.
He could play in the nickel. He could play in the box. He could play free.
I mean, when you can do that many different things, that entices the Cardinals. And so that would make sense. And even if Peppers wasn't their number two, if Baker was their number two, they had to go get him because, you know, you look at the safeties taken after him and it's free safety. None of the guys can play in the role that Baker or Adams played in. And that's what the Cardinals covet. They don't covet these free safeties. The only other guy that you could kind of make a case for would have been Josh Jones. And again, Keim talked about this in his press conference, and you and I have talked about this on the show. When you watch the Cardinals, and we'll talk about this later, when you watch the Cardinals, Josh Jones wouldn't have made sense with their second round pick based on what they did in the first round. Now, if they had taken Reuben Foster in the first round, Josh Jones would have actually made a lot of sense. But the way the Cardinals pick, the way that they tend to work is they try to find a guy that is quote unquote safe after they take a guy that maybe doesn't have the the on-field production of the first pick. So that's kind of their MO there.
And the thing with Baker is not only does he does fit the safe and productive part, but he also happens to match the high-end athleticism, the versatility, which, you know, Keim, I don't know how much hyperbole this was when he says that he hasn't come out of the first two rounds feeling this good about a draft since the Fitz Dansby draft way back when he was a scout, back in 2004. And maybe it's hyperbole, but, you know, Reddick was really high on their board. Buda Baker was really high on their board. They probably had him rated mid-first to, you know, probably, you know, range 20 to 25, I would guess. Had they traded down, he probably would have been the pick they would have made. I'm imagining if they'd gone to trade down, they would have gone with him there. But you have a player who has done nothing but produce and get accolades. I wrote a post on it, and it's not like I compiled the list. It came from the Cardinals. Just the list of awards and accolades he's been up for or have won, that's dating back to high school. Basically anything that you can be recognized for, he's done. He is a special type player in terms of production, and he just plays at a high level at every level, which makes you so excited to say, oh, wow. Because he's going to have, I mean, that's the one position, we talked about it a while ago, that's really the one position that we knew was a real chance of being able to play significant snaps. I don't think it will take very much for him to beat out Tyven Branch. And then he will play, you know, it will allow for a lot of mismatches and flip-flopping on the field because he's essentially a thicker, faster Tyrann Mathieu, being that he can't catch apparently.
Well, and the whole thing with Baker is that if he was 2 inches taller and about 20 pounds heavier, he probably would have been.
He'd be Jamal Adams, wouldn't
right,
he?
Right. He'd be right around Jamal Adams in terms of all of that. And, you know, you look at that and you see what they have, and that's the reality of the situation. And they got the guy they wanted. They got a guy that was high on their board. I wouldn't doubt that he had a first round grade for the Cardinals because, like I said, the way that they value versatility would have pushed a guy like Jabril Peppers and Buda Baker up their board. So Jamal Adams, you know, Jabril Peppers, Buda Baker are really the only three safeties that fit that mold in this class. And again, if you told me that they had Baker over Jabril Peppers, I wouldn't even hesitate to believe you. I would absolutely 100% believe you because Baker, you know, has made more plays, been more productive at that position. So overall, you know, I think this was probably the best pick of the draft because he's a guy that can come in and play in a variety of situations in a variety of roles. And he'll take some of the pressure off of Tyrann Mathieu. You know, one of the things that this does also, and you and I were, you know, not to be buzzkills by any means, but it also, if Mathieu, for whatever reason, cannot stay healthy in 2017, all of a sudden they have a talent that allows them to get out from under that contract. And now that they can, you know, now they have Baker. Is it more ideal to have Baker and Mathieu on the field together? 100%, absolutely. But again, availability is a prospect's best attribute or a player's best attribute. And Matthew's availability is basically 50%. So if he.
And here's the. And so what we're saying is not only does it relieve some of the pressure on Mathieu, it also raised the pressure a little bit on Mathieu to play at a high level because they drafted his replacement. Mike Jarecki, I mean, I think it was a little bit hyperbole. He said on the on another radio show on his station that basically Matthew's been put on notice. That I think it's a little bit on the harsh side because they love Tyrann and what he can do. But they have officially made him a little bit expendable after the season.
Right, exactly. And that's, I mean, fans don't want to hear that, and I get that. But the Cardinals cannot fall into another situation where they're paying high dollar to a player that's not available. And yes, it's different than the Darryl Washington situation for the reason that they're paying him, but it's the same in the fact that if a player's not available to play, it really doesn't matter the reason, they're just not available.
Now, if we think about look at the move that they made to move up for Baker, we go back down to number 45 where they originally were. Who were the players that were taken around there? The Bears ended up taking, you know, Ashland tight end Adam Shaheen, a guy that we speculated could be on the Cardinals' radar at tight end, but they didn't draft any tight end at all. You go Quincy Wilson, the quarterback out of Florida, Tyus Bauer out of Houston, outside linebacker, Joe Mixon, Ryan Anderson. Now, Ryan Anderson was a guy that the Cardinals really liked. And then a little bit further, you know, this is where you see that maybe DeShone Kizer, they were high on until the very end, and he just didn't show enough because he didn't even get – he wasn't – they passed – not only passed on him, but they would have passed on him or probably would have passed on him at 45 because he goes all the way down to 52. So clearly Baker was higher, and maybe he would have been the pick for the Cardinals at number 45 and they just couldn't pass on Baker. But here we see once again – where we'll see what happens. Baker will probably be an impactful addition to the team. But here, if we look here in a couple years, what is DeShone Kizer doing? Ryan Anderson, Tyus Bowser. We're going to see if those ended up being a wise move up.
Right, and that's, you know, it'll be interesting to see what happens there. If they, you know, when you move up in the draft, it's not just the team that gets under the microscope, it's the player, right? So, and then you have Shaheen, who did we talk about him on the show?
When we talked about the skill players, yes, on our offensive preview.
I mean, I was hearing second round chatter and I was blown away. Like, I was literally thinking if the Cardinals took him in the second round, that would be a wasted pick. Just a complete wasted pick. And then the Bears did it. Like, the Bears had a rough go of things from a public perception.
Yeah, and then you look at the rest of the second round. So let's come back and talk about the next pick, which the third round provides a little bit of interesting things. So they traded back. I've got a theory as to what happened there, and then we'll talk about their third round pick, Chad Williams. That's coming next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on Rise Up Sea Red. We've talked about both Hassan Reddick and Buda Baker. So we're moving down the line. The Cardinals originally were going to have pick number 77, and then they didn't. They didn't just trade down. They traded way down. They went from 77 to 98. Now, in part, that was to gain back a fourth-round pick that they had given up when they traded up for Buda Baker. But here's the thing. They end up picking up Chad Williams, Grambling State. He's kind of he's that Steve Kime, Bruce Arians special, third-round receiver. First, let's talk about Williams in terms of a prospect. Moving forward, if we look at the history of what Bruce Arians has done with the receiver, he really does fit. He's a tad bit taller, and he certainly is more physical. However, they were looking for that. What do you think of Williams as a prospect moving forward? Because he does offer some intrigue, and that's a round where you feel like, okay, he's going to be good, right?
Yeah, and Justin had talked about him a couple times on Revenge of the Birds. He had written about him as kind of a day three sleeper to know. And so why don't you give your theory, and then we'll discuss Williams.
So originally they were set to draft at number 13, so pick number 77. But how the round played out is that there were three trades within just a few picks of the Cardinals. The top of the round went bonkers, and so the teams that didn't originally have it, there were lots of trades, and going from the number six in the round, the Vikings, who got the pick from the Jets, take Pat Elflein, the center out of Ohio State, a guy who could play both center and guard, versatile. The Chargers pick Dan Feeney at number seven. Now he's versatile in the fact he could play guard. But then here's where the names get interesting for me, because of where we've seen some things. So at number eight, the Titans, at number 72, they pick Taywan Taylor, 5'11", speedy receiver, small school kid out of Western Kentucky. Chris Wormley is the Ravens trade up, take Chris Wormley out of Michigan, a safe player. And then the Falcons move up just a couple of picks ahead of the Cardinals to take Riley Duke, another LSU linebacker. He'll pair up with Deion Jones to make a fast, fast, fast linebacking core. But here's a couple things. Taywan Taylor is a perfect match for the Cardinals in terms of what they look for receiver. Duke Riley is a player that they were intrigued in. And if anything else, now while, you know, they already took a linebacker, Duke Riley in terms of special teams would be an absolute monster. And they would be able to get impact from him from day one. And then you also – but he's, and so I think my feeling, my gut says their original plan is that the reason why they moved that far down, I'm not willing to say that they weren't ever going to consider Chad Williams at number 77, because they're, by according to a lot of people, it's already a reach where they picked him at 98. So their original targets were all off the board for that third round. Basically, they had no one left in the third round that they had no more third round grades on, essentially. And so with Elflein and Feeney and Taylor and Wormley and Riley, even maybe perhaps even Alex Anzalone, that their third round board was wiped out. And so they traded way back, which allowed them to get the fourth round pick, which they wanted, because it turned out to be good. But it's interesting, the fact, because Taywan Taylor is a Bruce Arians perfect receiver. And I think that's what happened.
Right. And, you know, so what I always hypothesize with this is that it goes back to my belief, and we saw it last year with Brandon Williams, it goes back to my belief that the Cardinals, you know, utilize a horizontal draft board in terms of, instead of a vertical board. And so what happens is you have groupings of positions, so quarterback, running back, everything's grouped together, and then on the, you know, on the y-axis, so to speak, you have the round grade, so 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. And so you know, they say they have a 125 player board, and so that those players are then slotted into positional groups. So when you look at what happened, you wonder, like you said, if that third round, just the whole third round was just gone.
They right? got blown up.
So their horizontal board from the third round over, red quarterback, 0, running back, 0, you know, tight end, 0, wide receivers, 0. So everything was gone. So then they look at their board, and they look at a board and go, okay, fourth round, we don't have any quarterbacks that we're like super high on. Okay, we have this guy, and this guy in the fourth round. And then you go to their fifth round and you go, oh, okay, so we have, you know, for instance, say they had 3 running backs still on their running back board. And then they had 4 defensive linemen or, you know, 4 offensive linemen. And you just, you know, imagine the whole board there. And then they look at their wide receiver board and they go, all right, we only have 1 guy left, or that was in our 125. He may have been 125, but you're sitting at 77. You don't have anybody else in the third round. You move back to 98.
It's basically a fourth round pick, you know, right, in terms
and you,
of.
And you get the guy that you had rated at 125. Again, I'm making up a number here, but you get the guy that you rated 125. It's basically negligible in terms of everything, but you got the last receiver that you graded highly. I said this is what I think happened with Brandon Williams last year, is that their cornerback board from rounds 1 to 5 or 4 were blown up, and so all they had left was Brandon Williams on that cornerback board. So I think that's, you know, I think what Jess is saying is absolutely 100% true. I think they had an idea that they wanted one of those guys. I would hedge like Jess towards Taywan Taylor. It just, you know, when you look at who they picked after that in Chad Williams, they're very similar in a lot of aspects. They weigh the same. Williams is an inch taller. You know, Taylor's got better short area quickness. Williams ran a better straight line 40, but overall they're similar in what they, you know, in makeup. So, you know, all of a sudden that guy's off the board and they go, well, nobody's going to take Chad Williams in the next 21 picks. So we'll just move down and we'll get our guy, or if he's still there, you know? And so they look at the wide receivers and that's what you do. So overall, it's one of those things where, again, you hope that this guy doesn't have to produce in 2017, because that would mean that John Brown's not healthy. That would mean that Jerron Brown's not back and healthy. And that would mean that J.J. Nelson didn't continue to build on what you needed him to do.
So, well, and if you look at the track record of the Bruce Arians receivers, they don't, with the exception of T.Y. Hilton, they don't produce big numbers. That's never been a thing. In fact, Emmanuel Sanders didn't blow up until after he left Pittsburgh. Antonio Brown, what is it, about year three? Mike Williams, again, his was really only with Pittsburgh until last year in Baltimore. But even John Brown, he had flashes, but they weren't big-time receivers. So wide receiver 4, maybe, wide receiver 5, maybe.
Right. And so that's the whole thing is, but, and that's the other thing that I think fans are struggling with as the Cardinals become a good team. And that's, you know, that's just flat out what they are. They're not great. They're not bad. They're a good team. But what good teams do is they don't have to press young talent into action. Young talent can play when they're ready to, and they're good enough to play. And so I think that's where we are seeing the Cardinals at right now. And so you look at it, you know, like we talked about Hassan Reddick, he's probably going to get 400, maybe 500 snaps. Buda Baker, I'm going to guess, is going to get the most snaps out of all the rookies. Unless Dorian Johnson, who we'll talk about in a second, wins the starting job. You know, and Chad Williams, you're just hoping, you know, you're hoping he's your wide receiver 5 or 4, like you said, if Jerron Brown isn't healthy or John Brown can't get back to where he was before. And then you're hoping in year 2 or 3 that he becomes, you know, your wide receiver 2, maybe your wide receiver 1.
Wide receiver 1, because he's a traditional X, isn't he?
Yeah, but in terms of Arians, we know that he doesn't prefer to use it that way. And that was the other thing. You know, if you watch the film of Chad Williams, he plays in a lot of different positions. They work him out of the slot. You know, he plays in a spread offense, but he does a lot of different things. So, you know, that's the biggest thing with Chad Williams is that he wins from so many places. That's why he makes sense for Arizona, because he's another, again, what we talked about, versatile chess piece and where he can line up and win from.
Round 4, they picked up the extra 4th round pick that they'd lost, and they select probably, and for me, he was the biggest value pick, the best value pick that the Cardinals made in the draft, and that's Dorian Johnson, a 6'5", 300-pound guard out of Pitt, All-American last year, 39 straight starts at left guards. He started out as a tackle, and in his words, he moved to guard out of need for the team and really kind of held on to that. In fact, as a guy, I know some mock drafts, I think I pegged him perhaps even as a second round guard that they could look at. In terms of the style of play, he comes out of that Pitt pro style offense. So there's things that he will not have to be taught. Not playing in the spread. He actually knows how to play offensive line, and he has the type of athleticism that the Cardinals like in their guards. So really, really interesting pick. Very interesting he fell so far because of the conflicting information out there in terms of his liver condition. He's not worried. He said he's had it his whole entire life. It's never been a problem. Steve Keim, Bruce Arians joked that their livers are probably in worse shape than Johnson's. And but and they were unconcerned because it's something he's managed for his entire life. And while there's other chatter out there, I think out there on social media, just it is that it is a serious, serious condition.
Yeah, and so, you know, something that was given to me, and I dropped the ball and passing it along to you. I sent it to the wrong person, so, you know, enjoy that information that you got before I meant to send it to Jess, was that there were multiple teams on day two that took interior offensive linemen that had Dorian Johnson, the film grader, their film grade, higher than the player they took. However, he failed their medicals and they took him off their board. So that goes to the question of, you know, what do you make of that? What do you think of that overall? For me, you know, we've talked about this before. You take a chance on a guy like that in round four.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to talk about exactly what the medical thing said, but, you know, with whatever the condition may be, if it progresses to a point where he's unable to play, it's a fourth round pick.
Yeah, and you don't.
If they toss
Logan Thomas to the side of the road after a year. Earl Watford never really did anything. Alex Okafor flashed and then didn't do anything. A fourth round pick is you feel good if they do something.
Right. And that's the thing. So if you get a guy that starts for, you know, maybe he comes in and wins the starting right guard position. Maybe he comes in and, you know, is able to win the right guard position. And then 2018, maybe take over for Mike Iupati on the left side. And they're able to, again, rid themselves of a bigger contract. When you look at it from that vantage point, you look at it and you say, okay, if he starts even two out of the 4 years that he's here, that's a really good pick. If they get 32 regular season games and however many playoff games they're in, that's, you know, a really good pick. I mean, there's nothing more you can say about it. When you watch him on film, he's a dominant player. He was better as a junior than he was as a senior when Pitt was more in a power run game. And the Cardinals run a power run game where they ask their guards to pull, where they ask their guards to be athletic and move. And that's where he is best at. I think it's going to really, you know, push all the guards on the interior. And I would not be surprised if Dorian Johnson is the rookie that plays the most snaps in 2017.
I'm going to say he's going to push Evan Bame. I think Harold Goodwin, especially, he's really leery of rookies, really leery of rookies. So it's going to be, I think it's going to, Johnson was going to have to really dominate to be way better than Bame to be able to start in year one. But this is a really good pick because the Cardinals are doing with their offensive line what they weren't doing. They were dropping heavy capital into it. You know, with the Jonathan Cooper pick, the DJ Humphries pick. Now that's a pick you have to make because you want your left tackle to be special. With the signing of Jared Builder, with the signing of Mike Iupati, and they're now in a position where they're grooming guys for the future. They got DJ Humphries knowing that he would replace Bobby Massey, and who would eventually overtake Jared Builder. And guess what? It only took to the third year for him to move Valdir over to the right side. They have the potential now, if Cole Toner, because they really like him, if he continues to develop, if he stays on the same trajectory, and if Johnson can develop the way that and Bame can do the same thing, we're looking at an interior line of in 2018 of Dorian Johnson, Evan Bame, and Cole Toner, while you're able to keep the cost low on the offensive line without hopefully, you know, giving up too much talent like the Seahawks, because the Seahawks have tried to, we've seen them go on the cheap with the young, but it just, it hasn't been good. And the Cardinals are doing a really good job now of developing people. And that's because there are some players that they're going to have to be paying. Gonna be Patrick Peterson, you're going to pay a lot for a long time. Dan Buchanan next. Chandler Jones. Marcus Golden's going to be really pricey. David Johnson's going to break the bank next year. What about John Brown? What about these other receivers? And so you have to find ways to do things more cheaply, even if the talent is there's a slight level down. And Dorian Johnson is just the guy to be able maybe play this year, but most certainly take over in at left guard in 2018.
And you know, that's what this whole draft was. And when you look at it from the bird's eye view, I know everybody wants their first round picks to be immediate help. but that the reality is, like I said, the Cardinals aren't bad, so they don't have a ton of holes to fill. We all thought, oh, they're going to go with cornerback. And in this podcast, I'm pretty sure the Rise Up C-Red podcast told all of you multiple times that unless they got the top corner, they're not going to bring in another guy that needed work. Could Gary and Connolly have been the guy they wanted at 14 immediately? Possibly, but they weren't going to take that risk after what happened.
Right. And we move over to the fifth round where they make another offensive line pick. And to me, this was sort of the Cole Toner pick of a year ago. I was very like, I didn't understand why they picked Cole Toner a year ago. I thought he was an odd pick, and I thought for sure he wouldn't even make the team. I was wrong. And he showed more than apparently there maybe that they do know how to scout offensive linemen. Will Holden is the guy that was that for me this time around. A guy that, you know, I saw some projections third, fourth round. And then in another thing, I think one of the draft books I saw, he was projected as priority free agent. Didn't even need to be drafted. And so they go with Will Holden, 6'7", 311. He's a guy that, you know, he's not going to play this year unless terrible things happen. But you groom him and I don't even necessarily say 2018 he's who starts over Jared Verdeau, because then you can let go of that really pricey contract, because they've still got guys. I mean, they've got a Givens Price, they've got a John Wetzel. John Wetzel's already proven he can actually start and perform. And John Wetzel they could bring back as a restricted free agent in a year as well, and so it buys him a year. Nate Holden, I mean, your buddy Justice Mosqueda, he put out there, you know, he showed the report where, you know, if you look at four offensive linemen with his length and with his movement ability, the handful of players that were drafted in the fourth round and higher, now he didn't include anyone. He said he was just kind of lazy, but they're all really good names. In fact, Jared Valdir is in that same company. They're very similar. I wrote a little bit about it. It's very similar in athletic profile. Verdeer was much stronger than Holden is, but you look at a guy like Holden and you see a future. He's not going to play this year, but you see a future potential guy who could maybe start, especially because he comes with rare length and bend.
And that's what you like about that pick is, you know, Dorian Johnson was a top 50 player in this draft, if not for medicals. Will Holden is the type where you find a sleeper pick, right? The type that you scout movement skills, you scout unique length and size to go with foot quickness. And you say, okay, this is a guy that maybe in maybe not one, maybe not even two, but in you know, that 2 to 3 year range, we can count on to be a solid right tackle in the NFL, and at the cost of a fifth round pick. And then guess what? A second contract is like 3 years, $12 million. A second contract's not 5 years, $50 million. And so that's what the key is. And, you know, when you look at it, is Will Holden even going to make this roster? I think so, but
it's no guarantee.
Right. I mean, like you said, they love Cole Toner. They love John Wetzel. So they're going to have to cut one of those two guys. I mean, or they're going to cut Ulrich John, who played well for them in you know, his time before he got injured. So when you look at it, you have a starting offensive line of DJ Humphries, Mike Iupati, A.Q. Shipley, Evan Bain, and Jared Valdir right now. And then your backups are going to be Dorian Johnson, barring a medical issue. I'm going to guess John Wetzel is on that roster. Like
I have Wetzel as a lock on the roster. Right. I have Wetzel as a lock. And then after that, it's Toner and Johnson
and Holden
and the other guys all battling for what are ultimately three spots. Cause I think they keep nine linemen.
And so, you know, that's what the question is. Can Holden show enough to warrant that spot? That's the only question you have on him, is that will he get the time to marinate? Because he's not ready. If he was ready, he would have gone in the top, you know, 100 picks. But he's not ready. So you hope that in 1 to 2 years he is ready, and he's a guy that can, you know, be a difference maker for the Arizona Cardinals and allow them, like you said, to get out from another burdensome contract. In a perfect world, in an absolutely perfect world, they're able to get out from under Mike Iupati at, I think he'll be 31, and Jared Valdir at 31, with, I believe both of them will have at least 1 year left on their deal, maybe two for Iupati.
It'll be two for Iupati, one for Valdir, which should be about the time when you usually get out of those contracts.
Right, and you'll be able to get out from under both of those and get two young players that, you know, where you won't have a drop off. And again, that's in a perfect world. We don't live in a perfect world. So it may not happen. It likely won't happen, but that is what you go in with the mentality of these picks being. You don't go in with the mentality of, oh, we may have gotten a swing backup tackle, because you already have that in spades. I mean, Ulrich John, John Wetzel, and Cole Toner are all three very good swing offensive linemen, you know, backup swing offensive linemen. All three showed last year that they were good backup offensive linemen. Now you're looking for somebody that can push their way into a starter.
The second of their fifth round picks was TJ Logan, speed guy out of North Carolina. Wonderful, if actually a really good selection in terms of what they're looking for, because he becomes, in terms of, he's the Andre, he's the faster Andre Ellington, or perhaps I like a little bit more in terms of potential impact. I even like a little bit more Lerod Stevens Howling going back a few more years. This kid is fast. He was a backup to a more heralded guy, but this guy is dynamic in the return game. He's the type of guy teams are going to fear kicking to, and perfect. I mean, he's a perfect pick because they needed that Andre Ellington type impact on the offense, since Andre Ellington stopped being Andre Ellington and stopped being in sort of impact player on offense. And you get that in TJ Logan, who's faster than Andre Ellington, who's built about the same, but feels that he's a more durable version. Isn't he even though he's basically built the same height, weight, isn't he a thicker build than on Ellington?
Yeah, he's a more compact player. He's a guy that doesn't have a history of leg issues as a guy that, you know, obviously needs to use his legs to make a difference in the game. So when you look at that overall, and again, it's the same value. You've got TJ Logan. I mean, I know it was the fifth round and Ellington was the sixth round pick, but again, those are negligible at that point. You got a guy that could potentially be a game-changing return man, a satellite player, a guy that you can have on the field at the same time as David Johnson, using him in a different way. So, you know, it just, again, you talk about versatility. You have a guy in TJ Logan. One of his best highlights is against Clemson, then number one ranked Clemson, where his quarterback rolls out to the right and looks back across the field, throws the ball back across the field to TJ Logan about 3 or 4 yards down the field. And all you see is TJ Logan weave in and out of the national championship winning defense and take it in for a touchdown. It like it's nothing, like, like it was easy as pie. I mean, that's basically what he did. It was a sight to behold, and that's what your goal is. Again, when you look at high end versus low end, your high end goal of him is to be, you know, you hate to make
Andre Ellington impact on offense and great on as a return, because Ellington was horrific there.
Right. And that is in theory a guy like Darren Sproles. I mean, that's your ultimate goal. Yes. Is to have guy that can do a number of different things for your offense and your special teams and just be a game changer. And that's very difficult to find. So, but overall, that, you know, like I said, that is your goal.
They've wrapped up the draft in sixth round when they trade up. They trade away both the seventh round picks. They move up into the sixth round to take Rudy Ford out of Auburn. A guy who a lot of guys don't know a lot about. One, he was at Auburn. And then two, because of an ankle, he had a little bone chip in his ankle that he had some surgery on. So he didn't participate. So he didn't do anything at the combine. And he wasn't at the Senior Bowl. So you don't know much about him. And so, but it turns out he's a fast dude. Ran in the 4.3s at his pro day. Said on the call that he's really a 4.2 guy. So he was disappointed that he ran in the 4.3s. Played safety, played nickel. Originally was a highly touted running back coming out of high school, but they moved him to defensive back. But the interesting thing is that they said that their Cardinals are going to do combo position. They're moving him to cornerback, which, okay, 5'11", 205, doesn't quite have the length, but has been working with Patrick Peterson, working with Rod Hood, former Cardinal cornerback and a coach intern. This is an interesting thing that they believe that he can play on the perimeter and guard the perimeter. I like the pick in terms of athleticism and potential impact on special teams. But you know, some fans are saying that there's no way in the world he's starting this year, because he played briefly as a cornerback as a freshman and has been playing safety nickel ever since.
Yeah, and he's a guy that will hopefully contribute on special teams if he makes the roster. That's kind of where, again, the Cardinals are at now. These day three picks, you know, you hope you find something special, but in the end, you're so talented and you have so much depth at a lot of these positions that these guys have to earn their roster spots, which is great, because that means you're continually churning the back end of your roster and guys aren't comfortable and guys have to work hard to get there. You know, when it's all said and done, I do think Ford makes the roster as a special teams guy. I don't know if he sees any playing time or, you know, any significant playing time in the secondary in 2017. But again, that's, you talk about best case scenario. It's going to be finding a way to, get him reps that can allow him to be ready for 2018 to battle Brandon Williams after Justin Bethel leaves, you know, with his newly shortened contract.
And that'll wrap up talking about the draft picks. So in the final segment of Rise Up Sea Red, we're going to talk about grades for the draft. And then Seth's going to share with us some of his patterns, because we can kind of, he reveals to us some of the thoughts that we can look forward to in future drafts to know how Kime is going to draft. So that's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. Rise of Sea Red is back. Let's talk grades. You've noticed a trend that perhaps we've never seen quite the consistency among all grades, all experts talking, and they're all high grades, but not great grades. They're high, but not top end. And I graded them the same way. I graded them a B, and I graded them a B before I read anything else to make sure that I wasn't being influenced with what other people thought. And it seems to be in line with what other people are saying. Hassan Reddick, impact player. Buda Baker, impact player. You know, you get the risk of the third round, but there's a track record there. You get a value pick in the fourth round. You get, you have future. So they've got a mix of impact now, potential impact now, and, you know, future development. And the only thing that kept me from giving them an A was the fact that they didn't address the quarterback position, which I felt was the year to do it because of the types of quarterbacks there were, because of Carson Palmer. And so that's the only reason that kept – and the fact, you know, they neglected a tight end position that I thought was certain, absolutely certain that they were going to address, because – That tight end room behind Jermaine Gresham is sort of a mess when in terms of reliability.
And I, you know, I tweeted Kent Summers about this. It wasn't just their not picking a corner; it was the fact that they didn't pick a tight end. And you know, he said that,
and they had their opportunity to do it
right. And not even early. That's the whole thing. I mean, you look at this tight end class, and you know, we joked about how everything was referred to as historic, you know, oh, this is a historic class in this position and this. And in the end, it was just okay. But you had three first round tight ends. You had two second round tight ends, but then you had a lot of third round tight ends, fourth, or you only had one third round, excuse me. But then you had, you know, a fourth round, you had a couple, multiple fifth rounders. And you had guys, you know, falling to the fourth round, like George Kittle, Michael Roberts, Jordan Leggett. These guys all went in the fourth and fifth round. Jeremy Sprinkle went in the fifth round. Jake Butt went in the fifth round. Bucky Hodges went in the sixth round. There was talent available. Now the question was, why didn't they pick him? You know, all this stuff. Obviously, they think that either A, they can get somebody in free agency, you know, like undrafted free agency. Like maybe they really think they can convert Ricky Seals-Jones. I know we joked about it before, but I'm pretty sure he's going to have to convert to tight end at the next level. So maybe they think that they're going to be able to do that. I don't know, to be completely honest. So when you look at that overall, it didn't make sense in that case. What did make sense, right? What made sense was we saw a Keim draft come to fruition like it normally does. So I talked about it a little bit before. Hassan Reddick is a nice pick, a very good pick, high-end athlete. His production metrics are not great, but he did produce highly his last 2 years, more highly his last 2 years. What you got in the second round, though, was the opposite of that. Now, Buda Baker is still a fantastic athlete, as we talked about, but Baker was the highest producing safety that they could have gotten, even higher than Jamal Adams. I mean, he was more productive than Jamal Adams. Now, like I said, Adams is bigger, but he was more productive. He's more productive than Jabril Peppers. That's kind of the Keim MO, right? Like, all right, I if I'm going to take a risky player, if I'm going to take a player that doesn't have high-end production to go with the high-end, measurables, I'm going to take a more of a safe pick. We'll call it safe. And safe, I hate the word safe in the draft because all these kids are kids and, you know, who knows how they come out. But you look back at his career, Cooper was that high-end guy. Minter was that productive guy. You know, obviously that didn't work out the way they wanted it to. You look at 2014, Deion Buchanan was a freak of nature, but he was super productive at Washington State. So again, that was the productive pick. They took a flyer on Troy Nicholas, who was, you know, built potential, like, yeah, Greek god, a freak of nature athlete who didn't have good production. go to DJ Humphreys. Again, high-end potential, not great in terms of what he did on the field, but high-end potential. And then you look at the second round, Marcus Golden, high-end production. Measurables were not great, you know, all of that, you know, we've talked about that before, why we were concerned with the pick at the time, but you look at the production, it was higher than high end. I mean, it was just a high, he produced at a very high level. And you go to 2016 and you have Kim Dichie, who's again, the kind of freak guy. And then they used their second round pick to get a guy like Chandler Jones, who again, that's, in my opinion, that's the best utilization of draft capital is trading for already established stars. That's why the Patriots are so good at what they do, because you look at the Patriots draft, they got Brandon Cooks, Coney Ealy, Dwayne Allen with three of their picks. Those are good players. So, but, you know, back to the Cardinals and Steve Keim, that's his MO. I'm going to take a flyer, maybe not a flyer, but I'm going to take a risk on a guy, and I'm going to supplement that with a guy that is super productive, who I have less questions about. That's probably the best way to frame it. He has less questions than the other guy. The other thing that we've seen Keim really, really kind of do every year is he takes a risk in the third round. And you might say, okay, well, what do you mean? All right, well, you go back to 2013, Tyrann Mathieu, huge risk in the third round. All the red flags in the world. Kareem Martin in 2014, positional switch, high-end athlete, no production. But, I mean, he tested better than Jadeveon Clowney. They were going to try to play him as an outside linebacker. We all know how that worked out.
Well, then they're going to try him at defensive end. So they
yeah. John Brown, obviously small school, super productive. 2015, David Johnson, again, small school, a guy that was, you know, not even thought very highly of by the Cardinals. Let's be honest. That wasn't who they wanted at running back. They wanted Amir Abdullah. So, and then last year, Brandon Williams, obviously we know what the risk was of that one, why it was a flyer. And then you look at this year, Chad Williams, it all makes sense. That's when he takes his risky pick. That's when he takes flyers on guys that, and you know, maybe I'm reading too much into it, but I would even say, you know, that's when he goes with his gut, you know, to kind of really put it into layman's terms. Like, this is a guy that he trusts what he sees and what he sees and what he's seen in these players is the he's going to take a risk on this guy because it makes sense to him. Some of the other things that we've seen, he likes to double up on positions. You know, you look at it last year, they took three defensive backs. The year before that, they took multiple pass rushers. The year before that, you know, so in 2016, I'll go back, Brandon Williams, corner, Marquis Christian, safety, Harlan Miller, flexible defensive back. The, you know, 2015, you had Marcus Golden, Shaq Riddick. In 2014, you had John Brown, Walt Powell, both wide receivers, you know, and in 2013, you had Jonathan Cooper and you had Earl Watford. Right. So, you know, he tends to double up in his drafts, which is what he did with Dorian Johnson, Will Holden, two very versatile offensive linemen. Holden does project better at guard. I think he can play tackle because of his athletic ability. But, you know, Johnson is a guy that they think can play guard or tackle. A lot of guys do. So, you know, again, you have flexibility, two offensive linemen though, in the same draft. The last thing, and everybody knows this one, this isn't a, you know, anything, but when you look at it, they value versatility and they value speed, and that matters over everything else. That is king in terms of, you know, getting talent. You look back at all of it, you know, Jonathan Cooper was a freak athlete. They took him over Chance Warmack because of that. Obviously, Tyrann Mathieu, positional versatility. Ryan Swope was a 4-3 guy. We've talked about him before. And again, I'm talking more of like either at the high end level or at the positional skills. John Brown, obviously a 4-3 guy. Walt Powell had one of the fastest short shuttle and, you know, change of direction times around. Again, you know, David Johnson was a freak when he tested. JJ Nelson was a freak when he tested. So you just go back over those things. You know, Brandon Williams, you know, and then obviously this year with Hassan Reddick running a 4.52, Buda Baker was a low 4.4 guy. Chad Williams has allegedly run in the 4.3s.
In the 4.3s.
Yeah, so you look at what they do, and he has a pattern of how he does it, and it's done a good job, and so you know there's no reason to go away from that. I think everybody would agree that last year's the biggest question mark right now. 13's his worst draft, and last year is just the biggest question mark.
And then you also learn some patterns in terms of value. Now, one thing we already know between Keim and Arians is that they don't value wide receiver early. We knew that. We knew also that it doesn't matter how big or physical they are. Arians said this. They have to be fast. Mike Williams was never a possibility because as good as he is size-wise, he was only at best going to be an adequate speed, and they want top-end speed. They want, if you're going to be big and physical, they want you like Michael Floyd, who ran at, what, a 4.46 or something like that. He was, you know, rare speed to go with his size.
And the other thing was they inherited Floyd. So it wasn't that was even a pick of theirs. You know, they're not going to come in and cut a guy they just took 13th overall the year before. You know, when literally they had no receiver talent on the roster other than Larry Fitzgerald either. So there was no option. And we saw it, like, they gave him opportunity after opportunity, but they never forced him. And that's what I'll give Arians. He never forced it to be, you know, Michael Floyd. He allowed other guys to assume the role. John Brown, Jerron Brown at times, and JJ Nelson this year. Like, they never said, oh, we need you out there, Floyd. Like, he had a chance every game. If he didn't play well, then they didn't go back to him.
And then you also determined, you mentioned this earlier, but with the versatility, they simply don't value the center field safety. They just don't. They don't draft them. They let them go in free agency, and you know, they let their versatility or lower picks or free agents come in and fill that role.
Right. And, you know, we've seen that, like I said, Rashad Johnson, another guy they inherited, they didn't try to bring him back. They've passed on very talented
DJ Swearinger. They let go.
They let DJ Swearinger go. They've passed on very talented safeties in previous drafts because they're not guys that, again, they value. They want. It's not that Malik Hooker couldn't be that guy. It's that he hasn't been that guy. And I think people get that messed up, but you don't want to, you know, Hassan Reddick has played multiple positions on tape for Temple. So they're not worried about him. Whereas you look at a guy like Malik Hooker, he didn't necessarily play multiple positions. He wasn't an in the box guy. He wasn't a guy that played, you know, he didn't do a lot of coverage in the slot. That's something that Jamal Adams, Buda Baker did. Like I said, I think Jabril Peppers was on that list as well. You know, we'll never really know, but that's the reality of the situation and what we've seen from their team.
And that should probably do it. That should wrap it up for another long show. We're actually going to go on hiatus for a little bit with draft coverage wrapping up and with school and everything going on. We are going to go on break here on Rise Up C-Red probably until the month of June. So you will definitely have ample opportunities to listen to this long show. Unless, of course, they do something crazy like sign Colin Kaepernick or something like that. Not saying that'll happen, but we'll make something work. We'll make something work with another show if that happens again. So you know,
I've already warned Revenge of the Birds fans, if they do anything with Colin Kaepernick, I'm turning off all the comments.
That would probably be a smart thing. So this wraps up episode 157 of the Rise Up Seat Red podcast. At Seth Cox, I'm Jess Rude. You can find the show all over the place. It's on iTunes. If you like the show, subscribe. If you love it, leave a 5-star rating. We'll definitely appreciate that. We're on Google Play, Stitcher Radio, Blog Talk Radio, also featured on Seth's site, RevengeOfTheBirds.com, CardsWire.com for my site, and also on social media. On Twitter at Rise Up Sea Red, and also on Facebook, Rise Up Sea Red. Again, that's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. Go Cardinals, and we'll be back for another edition of Rise Up Sea Red in June.